Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the Church today.
Hello and welcome to The Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers. I'm pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent, a southeastern suburb of the City of London. I'd like to invite you to come and join us for our worship services each Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. or Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. for Vespers. Come along. I know that you will receive a warm welcome. I also help look after the Kent Mission. We meet at 46 Salisbury Road in Raynham, Kent, on the first Sunday of each month at 3 p.m. Again, if you live in the Medway towns, please do feel free to join us. And Wade Bell is back, and I also help look after the good folks up at St. Columba Lutheran Church in East Kilbride, Scotland. They meet each Sunday at 11 a.m. If you're in the East Kilbride, Glasgow area, please do come pay us a visit. We'd love to see you, and I know you would be blessed by that. Also, if you don't live in those areas, check us out on lutheran.co.uk. Hit the directory button. Find a congregation that's closest to you. Go along and join them for worship. I know that you will be blessed. Thank you again for all of your prayerful and your financial support for Lutheran Radio. For without your prayers, without your generous contributions, we wouldn't be able to carry on this ministry. So we are deeply grateful to you for all of your support. If you've missed any previous episodes of the Lutheran Inquisitor, go to our website, lutheranradio.co.uk. Go to podcasts, click on Lutheran Inquisitor, and scroll down and find a topic that just might catch your interest. We've got a lot of them, so I hope you can find one that, as I say, will catch your interest. Or go check out all the other programs on Lutheran Radio UK. Check them out in the podcast section. We would like to welcome back to the Lutheran Inquisitor today an old friend of ours, Professor Dr. Douglas Rutt. He is the provost and the chief academic officer for Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, Missouri. He's also professor of practical theology. And Doug was a missionary in Central America for almost a decade. So he has lots of experience with both the practical and the theoretical aspects of church work. And we've invited him along today to tell us about a couple of missionaries that he will be doing some research on in the near future. And we want to learn more about their stories. So, Dr. Rutt, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you. Good to be back.
We were talking about the fact you will soon be doing some research on particularly missionaries. You have a background of being a missionary within the LCMS, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Can you tell us maybe about your interest in missions, how you became a missionary, and what a missionary does?
It's an interesting story. It goes back a little ways. When I finished high school and was serving in the United States Navy, but my real goal in life was to become a professional pilot, and I actually trained. And while I was in the Navy and when I was discharged, I went to work as a professional pilot and a flight instructor. And I had my mechanics license as well for aviation. And when my wife and I were going to get married, my wife always had the dream of being a missionary. She was always thinking, she had read a story of a missionary, female missionary to China. Since she was a little girl, she was inspired by that and she wanted to become a missionary. So when she told her parents that she wanted to get married to me, they said, well, you realize that if you marry Doug, you will have to forget about being a missionary. But God worked in different ways, and eventually I decided to study for the ministry and went to seminary. And as I was a sem student, I was always interested in serving somewhere overseas. Deborah and I were both interested in that, but we didn't think it would really happen. Well, during my first 2 years at seminary, some folks from our mission board came on campus and asked us if we'd like to go overseas for a vicarage. That's the internship. And it would be 2 years instead of one. And Deborah and I looked at each other. We didn't even have to think about it. We said, yes. Yes, we would. And so we were sent to Guatemala, Central America. And that was just an experience. We spent a total of 8 years there that changed our lives you know, enriched our lives in so many ways, and just loved it and became very much in love with Latin culture. And so ever since then, I've spent most of my time, like I said before, so about half of my time in missions and about half of my time in theological education. But I've always been fascinated with some of the great stories of our mission history in our church body. There were some real pioneers. And so now, as I'm getting to the end of my career in the ministry, I have been granted a study leave. We call it a sabbatical, in order to try to work with our historical institute on a couple of important figures in Lutheran Church Missouri Synod mission history.
Yeah, we want to talk about one of those figures today, and his name is Henry Now. Can you tell us a little bit about him? I understand he was a very famous missionary in the 20th century.
Henry Now was born in Germany in 1881. As a young man, he must have been sort of a troublemaker, rabble-rouser. He actually got himself involved in a duel to the death with swords, and was injured and hospitalized for a long time, I guess a couple of months, because of that that kind of activity. And he was he finally decided he was going to come to America in his early 20s, and he was going to make a career gambling. He was good at it, evidently, and he was going to come here and be a gambler, a professional gambler. And so he sailed to America, came into New York Harbor. Things were not working out as he had planned. He became very discouraged. I think he was, this was about 1902, 1903. He was even contemplating just jumping off a bridge, you know, and a couple of Lutheran missionaries to the immigrants in New York came upon him. And they encouraged him, and they brought him into a home that they had for immigrants, to help immigrants, you know, get established here in America. And so these two missionaries worked with him for 3 months, and it turned out he was very, very intelligent. He had some theological background, and they decided, and he decided, that he should come to seminary in St. Louis and prepare to be a pastor. And so, just like that, he made his way to St. Louis, showed up here, and actually finished his seminary program in about a year and a half. He was then sent by the church to be a missionary in India. So he's in India from 1905 until 1914, and then went home for a furlough, went home back to Germany to visit his family. Well, then what happens? World War I happens, and he ends up in the army, the German army, for World War I. Actually, since he was theologically trained, he gets a role as a chaplain in the German military until the war was over. And in 1918, he came back to America, showed up in St. Louis, and said, "Well, where do you want me to go now?" And so it's kind of an interesting story. And then he ended up going to New Orleans for a bit to work among African Americans. And then eventually he became the president of a historically black college and seminary that was run by the church, Emmanuel Lutheran College in Greensboro, North Carolina. And he was there for 25 years. So just an interesting character. There's more I could talk about regarding him. He was at Greensboro, always interested in missions, never gave up on that. And in the 1930s, he got a leave of absence as president at Greensboro, and he was sent to Nigeria, where he really organized the Lutheran mission in Nigeria, which is now the Lutheran Church of Nigeria, and spent a year and a half there. And it's just amazing how much he learned about the culture there in Nigeria in just 18 months.
Different cultures, India, Germany, America, the black congregations and colleges in the Deep South. I mean, we hear a lot about cultural and cultural relativity. How do you think he was able to do that?
You know, that's a good question, and that's what I'd like to find out, because it does take a lot of skill, I guess, and a certain kind of attitude to really understand other people like that in other cultures. Like I said, if you read his book, We Moved to Africa, it's been republished now by his family. This book, it's amazing the knowledge that he gained in 1.5 years of this. And so, yeah, he just was a very bright guy, but I don't know much about his personality, and that's kind of what I'd like to try to get into a little bit more, if I can. There's a number of writings that he has left, later what happened is after he came back from Nigeria, he became very, very interested in ministry among Muslims. He started that in the mid-40s, became very interested, and they published a journal. They published a journal. I have 1959. Now, he died in 56, but then it just stopped. The society went away. The journal ceased. There's nothing in the last issue that says why the journal ceased. So these are the kinds of things that I want to try to get into. I also, like I said before, I'd like to get into a little bit more of an understanding of who Henry Nouw was and what he was like.
We have much more contact with Muslims. I'm guessing in America in the 1940s and 50s, that probably would have been few and far between. I must confess, I think the church's response is not the best. We often are afraid rather than wanting to engage. So how did he engage with Muslims of the 40s and 50s?
Well, he, because of his work in India, in the early part of the 20th century, he had experience getting to know many Muslims. Most of the Christian work in India, certainly in our own church body in India, focused on working among Hindus, not working among the Muslim population. But we all know that there's a lot of Muslim people in India as well. When he was in Nigeria, again, he ran into and met a lot of Muslim people, became friends with a lot of Muslim people. So he realized that it was a growing movement, and it was probably the only real challenge, or one of the major challenges, as, it's a missionary religion. It's a religion that goes out and tries to seek new adherents. And so he recognized this as a challenge, and he really felt strongly and had this burden in his heart to bring the gospel to Muslims. So he started this mission society, and then they started publishing this journal. And he traveled throughout the Middle East, made a couple of trips, investigating opportunities where missionaries could work, Lutheran missionaries could work among Muslims. Most of the places in the Middle East, he'd gone to Iran and to Iraq, and he'd gone to Lebanon, and throughout the whole region, Egypt. He just felt that it would not be feasible really to openly conduct ministry, but he did know that in India it was feasible and he could do it there. So he started promoting the idea that maybe the Lutheran Church should start work among Muslims in India, which is what happened eventually. And it's interesting that he himself, as an older man, went back to India as a missionary for 3 years. From 1950 to 1953, he went back to work among Muslims in India. And, of course, didn't stay too long. You know, he was getting older, and he died in 1956, like I said. But there's just so much to investigate here, and I feel that there is a biography about him, but what I want to do is delve into some of the things that the biography does not get into, especially what I'm interested in is his whole, the question you just asked, his whole relationship with ministry, to adherents of Islam, and the things that he wrote. He wrote the very first issue of the Minaret is something you could write today. Really. You could write today and it would make a lot of sense. You know, the things that he talks about. As he talks about working among, well, as he says, the Mohammedans.
Now, how was his work greeted by the church authorities, church administration. I suspect he probably ran into some difficulties. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But how did the church leaders, was he encouraged, or did they just think he was kind of mad?
There were a number of people. You know, this mission society was made up of a lot of lay people in his part of the country, and then a couple of other chapters opened up along the eastern seaboard. But the church at large, the headquarters, unfortunately, back in St. Louis, it seems, from what I'm reading between the lines, did not always welcome him warmly. And it was not until much later in his life, after he'd done a lot of work, that he was given the opportunity to come and speak to the seminary here in St. Louis. It was only toward the end of his life that he was given that opportunity to address the students about this need. And so, it's the way it is oftentimes with someone who's very entrepreneurial and, wants to push the limits and keeps prodding and asking, you know, to do something. So, it's an interesting part of the story too.
And again, what do we know about his work, as you say, in New Orleans and in the Carolinas? Again, in the 20s, 30s, 40s, there was all kinds of racial hostilities, all kinds of barriers that were put up. How did he break those down? And again, were those, I'm guessing, not always warmly received?
Yeah, and that's a good question. I'm not 100% certain about how that worked for him. I mean, it was a different day and age. I'm sure that things would have been done differently than they are done today. I do know from what I've been able to gather that he attended the church, the black church in Greensboro. There was a white church also. I think most all of the faculty members Emmanuel Lutheran College were white. Most of the faculty members and their families went to the white church, but it is a known fact that Henry Now and his family went to the black church. And yet at the same time, I'm sure he was a German, probably a stern German. Again, I don't know too much about his personality. I know of a couple of people that are still living who went to Emmanuel Lutheran College, which has since closed, that knew him, or at least were students there during his tenure. So I'm hoping to get a chance to be in touch with some of those people and find out more about how he was as a personality too.
Now, you mentioned he's kind of disappeared off the pages of history, but you say there, you know, is there any lasting legacy or any legacy that we can point to from his work?
Really, what this society eventually ended up doing was it ended up encouraging the church to properly prepare some pastors to work among Muslims. I hate to sound so negative about it, but I know that there are missionaries in modern days in our own church body that have gone to a country that's predominantly Muslim and barely read a couple of articles on Islam before they got there. But he worked with the church, and they helped make it possible for especially five men to prepare themselves in depth for working among Muslims. And these men are Luther Engelbrecht, Ernie Hahn, Roland Miller, Henry Otten, and Luther Meinzen. Now, especially Roland Miller has written a book now on outreach to Muslims. I think of these men, only one of them may still be living. But all five of these went to India to work specifically in a region among Muslims. And so that work has had some fruit to it. And I think these men, especially the ones that I know of, Ernie Hahn and Roland Miller and Luther Meinzen, all came back and wrote articles and wrote books about how to understand Islam and how to minister to Muslims. So I would say that would be the lasting part of it. The reason that the society just disappeared, I don't know. I've tried to find that out. I called the pastor at the church where the society was founded the pastor that's there today. And I asked him about it. He didn't even know it ever existed, And I said, well, do you have any records there in your church archives or anything? And he said he would look into it. And I haven't, because right now I'm so busy with other things, I haven't had a chance to follow up.
Yeah. As a former missionary yourself, what do you think, you know, the church today can learn from Now's activities even, you know, 100 years ago?
Well, I think that the church can learn to, you know, Now doesn't demonize Muslims like so often happens today. He treats them as people, as human beings. He befriended a lot of Muslims, and he, you know, tries to deal with them in love and respect. And so I think this is the kind of thing that we need to do as well. He wasn't afraid of working among Muslims or people of different backgrounds and faiths. He recognized that they're human beings like everybody else, and that they should be dealt with respect. So I think this is something that we can learn about him. That's why I want to kind of understand more about his approach. There's a number of articles that he wrote for the Minaret through the years, and I'm thinking I'm going to comb through everything that he wrote that I can find and try to paint a picture of, and maybe even create a compendium, you know, a book with a number of his writings that could be suitable for publication by our Concordia Historical Institute.
I have had the pleasure, our sister church in Germany does incredible work amongst the Muslims, and I've had the pleasure of speaking, preaching at one of their congregations in Berlin, which has literally thousands of former Muslims as members. And what a joy it is to see the liberation they have in Christ and the excitement they have at knowing the forgiveness of sins. So, yeah, it is, I think, very encouraging to, you know, don't be scared. Talk to folks about they want to talk to you about their faith. Talk to them about your faith. And so, again, did Now maybe talk to us about how we prepare to speak to Muslims or Hindus or even just folks of other cultures?
I think he can be very informative. I think that's what his whole, that's what he was doing through the Society for the Promotion of Lutheran Missions, you know, to the Mohammedan, as he said. I think that's what he really, that's what it's about. You know, understand, learn, be willing to talk to people, to, deal with people respectfully, to bring them the gospel. This book I mentioned that was written by Roland Miller, who was one of the early missionaries that was sponsored by this society, and he was one who went to India. The name of his book, it was published by CPH not that long ago, and it's called Muslim Friends. And that tells you something about their approach. That's the title of the book, Muslim Friends.
Dr. Wright, you mentioned that you were wanting to explore two missionaries. Who else do you want to learn more about other than our friend Mr. Now?
The other missionary that's fascinated me a lot is the pioneer missionary to Central America that was sent by the Missouri Synod after World War II. There was a great explosion of mission work all around the world after World War II. That's not only in our church body, but other church bodies as well. Before that, we basically worked, you know, had been working in China. We worked in India and in Africa, but after World War II, a whole number of places opened up. But Robert Gusick was his name. Robert Gusick went to Guatemala in 1947 and really organized the mission work there. And he was also one of these old-time, hard-working, German-speaking kind of missionaries that did so much, but he was also a great thinker, and he explored the proper approach to ministry and to mission work in that should be followed in Latin America. So I've always been fascinated. I wrote an article about Robert Gusick's missionary strategy. It was published in the mid-1990s, but I want to follow up. The reason that's occasioned all of this is that the Concordia Historical Institute, which is on our campus, just received Robert Gusick's entire library as well as his archives. And during his entire life, he kept his files in order. And so I do intend to spend some time to follow up on Robert Gussick, his missionary thinking especially, and his some of the things that that he did when he was in Central America, mainly in Guatemala, but he really was responsible for the ministry that began also in Honduras and El Salvador and Panama.
And there is quite a legacy of Lutheran and Lutheran churches in Central America.
Yeah, the big thing that Robert Gussick did, I think, and what I really appreciate as a missiologist myself and as a practicing missionary, is that he felt it was very, very important to create an indigenous ministry. In other words, the ministry, right from the very beginning in Guatemala, for example, should be carried out by Guatemalan pastors. So he focused on wanting to train and empower from the very beginning Guatemalan pastors. He did not want to see a situation where all of the ministry was carried out by missionaries, by foreign missionaries, but rather that local people would be empowered, trained and empowered to carry out the ministry among your own people. He felt that that was really the key to the success of that mission. It never happened exactly like he had hoped. A number of things intervened, but that was clearly his, through the research that I've done and the documents that I've read, that was clearly his intention: create an indigenous ministry.
Dr. Douglas Rutt, we thank you so much for introducing us to these two sadly forgotten or almost forgotten missionaries. We do pray God's richest blessings upon you as you do your research about them, and we look forward to learning more about them. And we pray God's richest blessings as you continue to do your teaching and your work at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Please pass on our greetings to all our friends there, and hopefully we will, again, our paths will cross in the not-too-distant future. But thank you for being our guest. We deeply appreciate your insight, your encouragement, and your support.
Thank you very much. It's been great to be with you.
Thank you for listening to The Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.